Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Quip Electric Toothbrushes. Right now, if you go to getquip.com/martini, you'll get your first refill pack free with your Quip Electric Toothbrush. Much more on them a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, as we speak, the government is still shut down, or at least the non-essential part of it. And by the time folks hear this, there may have been a vote in the Senate that gets the ball rolling on reopening the full government. Maybe not. So keep that in mind as you listen to this. It's been interesting over the past couple of days since midnight Friday, Jim, how this has kind of played out. I think you were probably as surprised as I was about how many mainstream, read that, lean to the left media outlets actually told the truth in their headlines following the Senate's inability to get to 60 votes for the funding bill on Friday night. The original New York Times headline read, "Senate Democrats block bill to keep government open past midnight. Shutdown looms." The AP also had it on the Democrats that there was a shutdown. The Bloomberg headline, "U.S. shutdown starts as Senate Democrats block GOP funding plan." So as a result of that, there's a little more pressure on the Democrats than usual to actually solve this, or at least on some Democrats. Manu Raju over at CNN tweeting out this morning, "Dems emerging from bipartisan meeting in Collins' office saying that they're going to discuss with leaders moving back noon vote to see if they can get a deal. They want a firmer commitment from McConnell to move on immigration." And Jim, we can probably guess who these Democrats are because we could see the vote from Friday night. It was basically vulnerable Democrats in red states. Joe Manchin, Claire McCaskill, Joe Donnelly, Heidi Heitkamp, Doug Jones down in Alabama is not up till 2020, but he certainly knows what side of the ledger that most voters in Alabama are on with this. So there might be a little more pressure on the Democratic leadership to actually be reasonable here than there has been in recent shutdowns.
If you're Chuck Schumer or have any sense of responsibility for the continued well-being of the Senate Democratic Caucus, you probably want to listen to the Joe Manchins of the world, the Heidi Heitkamps, the Joe Donnellys. You don't want to risk these people. The general polling for the 2018 midterms looks pretty good for Democrats, but you obviously have a bunch of folks who are running in red states that Trump won, and Trump won pretty handily, and who are undoubtedly worried about their prospects for re-election. Now, as I said, now maybe it ends up with a circumstance in which the general public blames Republicans for the shutdown. That's what happened in past cycles, but Democrats didn't benefit from it too much in 2013 because right after the government shutdown ended, they unveiled healthcare.gov, and we all remember how wonderful and successful that was. So you end up with this, I think more likely a pox on both your houses, oh, those schmucks in Washington, why can't they get their act together type attitude. The polling that was out this morning from Politico pointed to 41% of the public blames Republicans, 36%, I believe, was the Democrats. That's not a 5-point split, is not a terribly big response. And of course, most people, everyone else was saying, I blame both or you know, didn't want to answer. If your red state folks are worried about it, it probably means they are not comfortable with the idea of this being framed as Democrats are shutting down the government in order to save DACA. Polling indicates that DACA is very popular, but my sneaking suspicion is that support is a mile wide and an inch deep. The same way you get a lot of good numbers for gun control and then NRA-backed candidates win the elections. There are a lot of people who might like DACA, but they're not going to vote over it. It's not really their big driving issue. It is a big driving issue for a bunch of pro-amnesty or road to citizenship or path to citizenship folks in the Democratic Party. But by and large, the public doesn't really want you to shut down the government over this. And my sense is there are more and more red state or centrist Democrats looking at this and saying, guys, we could really overplay our hand on this very easily if we haven't done this already. Now, look, we are recording this a little bit after 11 o'clock on Monday morning. There was supposed to be a vote at 12. Now they're talking about pushing it back, but they say they're making progress. Look, maybe this government shutdown ends pretty quickly. Maybe it doesn't, and maybe it goes on for a longer stretch than this. But my sneaking suspicion is there are a bunch of Democrats who realize, wait a minute. Things have been looking really good for us so far. We do not want to louse this up by creating a big partisan mess that just gets everybody angry at Washington, because if it gets people angry at incumbents, It's the Claire McCaskills and Joe Manchins and Joe Donnellys of the world who are going to pay as much as the Republicans will.
Just a couple of quick follow-ups on this, one serious and one not so serious, or perhaps just pathetic. Kudos to Mitch McConnell for saying that we're not going to talk about these other things until the government's back up and running. And the Democrats and some Republicans like Lindsey Graham are obviously pushing for him to commit to having a vote on an immigration deal. And what they're talking about is the Gang of Six. Tom Cotton tweeted this out on Sunday, which I think a lot of people don't know. Quote, did you know Flake Graham Durbin grants amnesty to parents of the DACA population? The whole rationale of DACA is kids ought to be not responsible for the crimes of the parents, but can't parents be responsible for the crimes of the parents? So legalization for everyone of DACA eligibility, not just those who signed up with it, as well as legalization for all the parents. So that's what Lindsey Graham, that's what the Democrats want there. So whether or not folks are fully aware of that, that's kind of what's on the table right here.
John Fund has a very good piece on National Review Online today saying, look, where Democrats can and should be worried is this becomes the discussion of chain migration, right? It turns into, look, we all like immigration in the abstract. We all like legal immigration in the abstract. And as long as the DACA debate is, look at this kid who turned out to be the valedictorian of his high school class and has never gotten in trouble and came here as an infant and always thought he was an American and is as American as you are. Okay, you know, like people love those stories. When it turns into, okay, because this person we are making a citizen, now all of a sudden they've become an anchor, so to speak, and now all of a sudden everyone can, you know, by saying, oh, well, I'm connected to this person, so I have an easier path to citizenship. And this person and their family has a path to citizenship. People aren't really a huge fan of chain migration, because just because you're related to somebody who's here, well, maybe you're going to be a good citizen, maybe you aren't. Maybe you're, you know, the kind of person the country should allow in, maybe you aren't. It's not quality-based. It just happens to be who you happen to be lucky enough to be related to. There's a growing skepticism about that in this country. So if I'm the Democrats, you know, look, take your win. You go, or the other alternative is when you heard some noises about Gutierrez and Schumer both making noises about the wall. First of all, it's worth noting they're talking about authorization for the wall,
right,
not appropriation for the wall. So we'll give you permission to build it, but we won't give you money to build it. I don't know if you know, those who can do math can recognize, wait a second, the wall doesn't get built under that scenario. And the second thing is that, look, if you're Chuck Schumer and you think you're going to have control of the House and or control of the Senate starting in January of next year, you can always undo any promises you make right now.
Yes. Oh, that's exactly right. And interestingly, in the Gang of Six bill, they do appropriate a little over $1.5 billion for border fencing. But if you get into the fine print, it's to deal with existing fencing. No additional fencing is allowed. Anyway, in terms of the pathetic side of this, Jim, Robert Costa over at The Washington Post tweets out Saturday morning, members also complaining to me that the House gym lacks enough towels this morning, and they wonder if it's because of the shutdown.
I'd love to know which member of Congress actually said that. Wouldn't you? Like, you know, I would form a pack to support whoever is running against that guy. That's what I want. I don't care if it's my favorite. I don't think it's one of my favorites. I don't think that, you know, Pat Toomey's of the world would do something like that. But maybe they did. But even if they did, if you say something like that, by golly, and you're dumb enough to say that to Robert Costa, what the heck's wrong with you?
All right, Jim, let's move over to the bad martini now. And stop me if you've heard this excuse before, courtesy of NBC News. The Justice Department has turned over to Congress additional text messages involving an FBI agent who was removed from special counsel Robert Mueller's investigative team following the discovery of derogatory comments about President Donald Trump. But the department also said in a letter to lawmakers that its record of messages sent to and from the agent, Peter Strzok, was incomplete because the FBI, for technical reasons, had been unable to preserve and retrieve about 5 months' worth of communications. Jim, this was an excuse that was pretty hard to believe when Lois Lerner and the IRS was peddling this as to why Congress couldn't have thousands upon thousands of emails. Now we're getting it again from the FBI at just the critical time that Peter Strzok's communications could really shed some light on what was and wasn't happening over at the FBI.
Greg, I hear this and I just want to send over a crate of Red Bull to the Department of Justice Inspector General's office and say, guys, stay up as late as it takes. Get whatever resources you need, whatever you got to do, get to the bottom of this, because this sure as heck looks like high level officials at the FBI destroying evidence. And now we know what happens if you destroy evidence in a criminal case that the FBI is working on. They come down on you like a ton of bricks.
But if the FBI is going to say, look, we made a bunch of text messages that might call into question our professionalism, our objectivity, our ability to be fair-minded about the people we're investigating, might suggest that we have a partisan vendetta about some of the most important and high-profile investigations we're going on. Whoops! Oh, both of our phones just happened to delete 5 months worth of messages that you guys were subpoenaing and asking about. Why? What are the odds? Ah, gosh, golly, gee willikers. Suddenly I'm turning into John Kasich. golly, there's an unfortunate turn of events and just couldn't happen. You know, we pressed the wrong button, like we're a Hawaii emergency management officer or something. We just happened to delete 5 months, and it just happened to be the 5 months you were looking for. Sorry about that. No, we cannot tolerate this. We cannot accept this. And this is the sort of thing that requires, you know, not only should everyone involved be fired, but if they destroyed evidence, they should be prosecuted for that. They cannot make an exception for, they're FBI, they're good guys. We got to give them a pass on something like this. This is the sort of thing that, well, like, I think this is one person who said, who reacted to this news and said, look, and people wonder why there are people who watch Alex Jones. I mean, like, Alex Jones makes all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories about chemicals turning the frogs gay and stuff like that. But when the government acts this shamelessly, then all of a sudden people start believing, oh, okay, maybe they would be a vast government conspiracy against Trump. Maybe the FBI really would be, you know, putting their thumb on the scale and trying to make sure that Hillary Clinton didn't get prosecuted, things like that. We need trust in law enforcement. And when guys act like this, then they, you know, offer implausible excuses about vital evidence accidentally being in. You know what this reminds me of, Greg? And I'm about to date myself here.
What?
This law firm record suddenly appearing in the White House after being under subpoena for 2 years. Oh, they're under this. They just ended up on a table. It's amazing. So
yeah, the Rose Law Firm records, Hillary's subpoenaed emails that got bleach bitted. You know, there's plenty of evidence here. And I just got to say, lefties, you know, if you're going to cover up evidence, at least come up with a different excuse than just, you know, we lost all these emails. But apparently they can't. All right, Jim. If you can't clean up the ethics at the FBI, you can at least clean up your oral health. When it comes to your health, brushing your teeth is one of the most important parts of your day, and Quip knows that well. They've combined dentistry and design to make a better electric toothbrush.
Quip is the new electric toothbrush that packs just the right amount of vibrations into a slimmer design at a fraction of the cost of bulkier traditional electric brushes. Guiding pulses will alert you when to switch sides. That makes brushing the right amount just effortless. Quip also comes with a mount that suctions right to your mirror and unsticks to use as a cover for hygienic travel anywhere, whether it's going in your gym bag or carry-on. Now, I don't know about you, Greg. I have my Quip toothbrush. I am extremely happy with it. I probably wouldn't want to put it into my gym bag. Yes, I'll pause for everyone to express surprise that I work out. The clothes get a little stinky. The clothes get a little dirty, stuff like that. With the cover, don't worry, you're not going to have any of your stinky, sweaty gym clothes scents or tastes on your toothbrush. I've talked about in the past that Quip is just fantastic. A little guide that they give you tells you that basically everything you know about brushing your teeth turns out to be wrong. Turns out you don't need to use nearly as much toothpaste as you thought you did. It comes with it. It tastes great. It's very effective. They talk about the right kind of types of brush strokes to use. I can just feel it and taste it in my mouth. Quip is a really effective product, and one that I'm very happy to endorse here on this podcast.
And because the thing that cleans your mouth should also be clean, Quip's subscription plan refreshes your brush on a dentist-recommended schedule, delivering new brush heads every 3 months for just $5. That includes free shipping worldwide. Quip is backed by a network of over 10,000 dental professionals, including dentists, hygienists, and dental students. Most toothbrushes don't get named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of the year, but Quip did. And find out for yourself why. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/martini right now, you'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/martini, spelled getquip.com/martini. And Jim, our bad martini was under the auspices of, yeah, we just don't believe you. That's kind of where I am heading into our crazy martini today. This is the Time Magazine, actually, version of this story. A neighbor who allegedly attacked Kentucky Senator Rand Paul over a lawn care dispute will plead guilty after being charged with assaulting a member of Congress, which is a felony offense. Rene Boucher, 58, has signed a plea deal, but no date has been set for taking his guilty plea, according to an announcement from the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Indiana. Senator Paul was mowing the lawn of his Kentucky home in November while wearing headphones when Boucher apparently witnessed him stacking brush into a pile near his property. Boucher had, quote-unquote, had enough, according to the release, and rushed onto Paul's property where he tackled him from behind. The attack left the 55-year-old senator with multiple fractured ribs, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and he later contracted pneumonia. Jim, the line stacking brush into a pile near his property means this guy flew into a completely uncontrolled rage over an incident that had nothing to do with his property. So either this is complete garbage in terms of the explanation, which I believe to be the case, or this guy's so nutty he belongs in a straitjacket in a rubber room for the rest of his life.
Buddy, Bruce Banner didn't do this when he lost his temper, okay? Calm down. Look, this way. Every once in a while, Greg, I think about, I think Three Martini Lunch, as a title, describes our podcast well. We try to make it fun. We try to make it happy and cheery and make people laugh in the course of running through the day's headlines. But every once in a while, I think about whether we could or should rename it. For a while, I thought for like, Way to Go, Nevada, Way to Go would have been a good title. You know, it turns into one of our recurring phrases, tears in his eyes, you know, or something like that. But I think I Don't Believe You would be a good title for it now, because I just don't believe this guy. When he says, oh, I was really upset about that wood that he was stacking. That's why I tried to kill him. No, I'm sorry. No. The guys on HGTV don't try to kill people over landscaping issues and stuff like that. Nobody cares about stacked wood that much. Not Abe Lincoln building a log cabin. Nobody gets that upset about that. It's over the politics. And he tried to kill a U.S. senator. As long as this guy ends up going away for as long a time as possible, I'll be happy with this. But again, this is in the second category of people lying to us because either they're stupid, Greg, or they think we're stupid. And like you, I'm not buying it at all.
No, not for a second. So anyway, off to an interesting week, Jim. And yay, we've got a Patriots-Eagles Super Bowl. So with the Jets being in the same division as the Patriots for all these years, and Jersey, of course, sharing fan loyalties between the Jets and I guess maybe the Giants to some extent and the Eagles, I'm sure you're just super excited about this.
I'm rooting for the commercials, Greg. Now I know when to get the snacks, when to take the bathroom breaks, when to, you know, do all that kind of stuff, because, you know, it's supposed to be some good movie trailers. You know, there's always fun with Pepsi and Doritos and Bud Light. I'm sure there's going to be a giant Game of Thrones dilly dilly from Bud Light. There'll be a lot of fun stuff going on, and there'll be a football game going on. If the Eagles win, I think most of us who can't stand the Patriots will be you know, happy and kind of cheery, and it'll be probably ranked as one of the great upsets of recent history. But let's face it, you know, New England is cutting through other teams like a hot knife through butter. They always seem to find, you know, some way to make that amazing play and or get a really convenient penalty, Greg. I don't know if you noticed that yesterday, but, you know, did you know that New England Patriots yesterday had only one penalty called against them?
That's true.
And not only that, they tied the record for the fewest penalties called against a team in an AFC championship game. The previous owner of the record, the New England Patriots as well. For some reason, the refs can't seem to find their yellow hankies when the Patriots do something wrong. So anyway, hopefully it'll be a good game, but I'm not optimistic, Greg.
Not excited about the game at all. Jim, see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends at Quip Toothbrushes, getquip.com/martini. And tune in again Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.